My guest, Diana Abu-Jaber, is the author of the new novel, Crescent. It's about a 39-year-old woman named Serene, who works as a cook in a Lebanese cafe in Los Angeles, which is a gathering place for Arab-American students. The cafe is inspired by a restaurant Abu-Jaber used to frequent when she taught at UCLA. Diana Abu-Jaber is also the author of the novel Arabian Jazz. Her father is a Jordanian immigrant. Her mother is an American of Irish descent. When Diana was a child, her family moved to Amman, Jordan for 2 years, then returned to the U.S. She now lives in Portland, where she teaches at Portland State University. Let's start with a reading from her novel, Crescent.
Nadia's cafe is like other places, crowded at meals and quiet in between, but somehow there is also usually a lingering conversation, currents of Arabic that ebb around Serene, filling her head with mellifluous voices. Always there are the same groups of students from the big university up the street, always so lonely, the sadness like blue hollows in their throat, blue motes for their wives and children back home, or for the American women they haven't met. The Arab families usually keep their daughters safe at home. The few women who do manage to come to America are good students. They study at the university and cook for themselves, and only the men spend their time arguing and being lonely, drinking tea, and trying to talk to Nadia, Mirai, and Serene. Especially Serene. They love her food, the flavors that remind them of their home. But they also love to watch Serene, with her skin so pale it has the bluish cast of skim milk, her wild blonde head of hair and her sea-green eyes. She has the worst kind of hair for a chef, curly and viney and falling all over her shoulders, resisting ponytails and scarves and braids. She is so kind and gentle-voiced, and her food is so good that the students cannot help themselves. They sit at the tables, leaning toward her.
Thanks for reading it. That's Diana Abu-Jaber from her new novel, Crescent. What do you think is the importance of a good Arab restaurant for Arab students in the United States?
It's uncanny. It has this ability to draw people together in a way that I think may duplicate some of the rhythms and some of the nuances of home. I think maybe it's the smell. That people walk into a good Middle Eastern restaurant and it immediately smells like home. And there's something that really gets to that nervous center inside the body, I think, where our memories and our deepest sense of childhood resides. So it draws people together. And then there you get your community, you get your family of a sort reassembled and everyone's together again. So it's communal.
In your novel, the restaurant was previously owned by an Egyptian cook and his wife, but after the Gulf War, men in business suits start hanging out at the hotel taking notes, and the rumor goes around that these guys are with the CIA. And once people start to believe that these guys are with the CIA, the clientele no longer shows up. Customers don't come. Was that a problem at the restaurant that you were talking about? Were there rumors of CIA there?
Well, there are always rumors. I find that that comes up very frequently at Middle Eastern restaurants, especially in the current climate where there is a lot of scrutiny of the Arab American community and people are nervous, you know, and I think that there are legitimate reasons for that too, a lot of looking over the shoulders. The restaurant that I had in mind actually was a little place in Eugene, Oregon, where in fact there were two agents of some sort who showed up and would sit at the cafe counter every day and take notes in little pads. And the cook complained to me about it and said, I don't know what to do about these guys. They've just moved in and they're scaring all the customers away. Not only the Middle Eastern customers, the American and non-Middle Eastern as well. So I know that that was something that did happen in certain communities.
Let me ask you about the two main characters in your book. Let's start with Serene. Why don't you describe her?
Well, Serene is someone who I think of as struggling to discover her cultural identity. She's someone who was raised by an Iraqi uncle, an immigrant, and yet very much a mainstream American woman. She was born and raised in Los Angeles, and I think she's tormented in a sense by not completely understanding what her connection to her cultural legacy is. She doesn't look traditionally Arab. She has this white blonde hair. She's very pale. People on the street would not recognize her as being of Middle Eastern descent. And I wanted to draw on that kind of internal conflict. What part of me is Iraqi? What part of me is American? Is it something that I've inherited? Is it in the blood? Or is it what people tell me I am? And I think that her condition mirrors that of a lot of young Americans, and that they feel a connection or a longing for a place that they may or may not have been born into, and they want to reclaim it if they can, but it's not always immediately accessible. Han, her love interest, is an immigrant. He is an exile from Iraq. I was very interested in trying to conjure up and create this sense of longing and the painful experience of exile. Iraq was, in some ways, a logical choice for me because I wanted to look at what it meant to have a homeland. You knew it was there, but you just couldn't quite get back to it. And Han is expressive of the experience of a number of Iraqis that I know who've had to leave their homeland, come to America, but never completely leave their homeland behind. So,
now let's start with Serene again. Let's get back to Serene. You describe her as somebody who doesn't look Arab. She's very pale. She has blonde hair. Kind of describes you. Pale. Not blonde hair, but you have like reddish brown hair. I think you're part Irish. And you look part Irish probably more than the Jordanian part.
Yeah, it's true.
So what issues has that created for you in terms of personal identity?
Well, it's interesting because my father, being an immigrant, actually Jordanian, he really felt very strongly connected to the home country. And he wanted his daughters, still wants his daughters, to be Jordanian women. When we were growing up, he used to tell us that over and over and over again, "You are good Arab girls." And we had that sense that America was all sort of a big, crazy, wacky mistake that he'd made, and someday we were going to go back to Jordan and have our true lives. So we always had that in front of us. We ate Middle Eastern food, and we listened to Middle Eastern stories and Middle Eastern music, and yet we were living in America. I was the only one in the family who looked not traditionally Arab. And my aunties used to make a big deal out of it, and they would say, "Oh, isn't it lovely? You have this one pale one," you know, and it was like this special thing that, of course, made me completely crazy when I grew up because it meant that I didn't know exactly where I fit into the scheme of things. So I knew that I wanted to explore that question about how the way we look affects so much the way people react to us and tell us who we are.
When your father said he wanted you to grow up like good Jordanian girls, what did he have in mind?
Well, I can tell you exactly what he had in mind, that we would remain Vestal virgins until the moment of his choosing, in which he would present us with the Jordanian man of his choosing, who would be a prince, by the way, a Jordanian prince. I don't know where he was going to get this Jordanian prince, but, and then we would be married to the Jordanian prince. We would move back into the house with mom and dad and have our children at home, and they would dance around his knees. He always added that part in, that the grandkids would dance around his knees. So, he had things pretty well mapped out for us. You know, we didn't go out to dances. We didn't go to sleepover parties. We didn't date. It was very circumscribed, kind of codified upbringing, and very traditional.
Why did your father move to the United States? What first brought him here?
Well, the official reason is that he was searching for his fortune and to make good in the world. But apparently the unofficial reason is that he had fallen in love with one of his cousins and had gone to court her in Jordan before he had left. And after courting her for 3 days, she looked him over and decided that she wasn't interested after all. And he decided that if he went to America and became rich and fabulous, that it would make her so regretful and so unhappy that she would change her mind. So he came to America. He had brothers here also, and he came and stayed with them and immediately met my mother and fell in love with her, and the rest is history. So much for the cousin.
Did he ever go back and meet the cousin?
Well, I have heard from my uncles about this cousin that she has gotten very fat and unhappy, and she is regularly eating out her heart, but I don't know how true this is. So
there's a short passage from your novel Crescent I want you to read.
But a few Arabs have a long, long memory and like to believe that someday the world and everything in it will be returned to them. Most other Arabs would settle for a little bit of peace, less fighting in the backyard, getting to keep the backyard, etc. And then there are the Arabs who feel that no matter what it is they want, the world or a little peace and quiet, America seems to be dedicated to keeping it from them.
Can you talk a little bit about that last line about how whatever it is they want, America seems to be dedicated to keeping it from them?
Oh, you found that sentence in there. Well, I think there is a sense that America has too much, that it has so much power and wealth and education and strength, and that they are able to change the fortunes of the world. And I feel that a number of Arabs look at America and feel that because of the negative portrayal of Arabs in this country, and because of sort of a lack of support that I think a lot of Arabs feel, that America will never try and make the kinds of connections that many Middle Eastern people, I do think, hope for. They see that, you know, for example, that Israel is able to be strengthened and beautified and empowered by its connection with America. And I think a lot of Middle Eastern people in Arab countries would like to have that same sort of empowerment and that same sort of connection. And I know that that's a sense of real sadness and frustration for a lot of Arabs in this country as well. You know, the Hollywood representations that are just so negative and so damning and sort of relentless, you know. So there's a real wish for some kind of rehabilitation, if you will.
Since September 11th, have you had a lot of, you know, friends or students who have had trouble staying in the United States because of post-September 11th immigration issues?
Yeah, definitely. On campus, you know, you used to see the student union would be filled with many Middle Eastern students who would all congregate talking and laughing and smoking, and that's all gone. You know, it's gotten completely quiet. It's really cleared out. I mean, to me, it's a striking absence.
Why is that absent now?
Well, I think a number of them were called home. Their parents brought them home. I think that there was a lot of fear in terms of immigration. Also, I think that there was a lot of fear in terms of a kind of anti-Arab backlash. Because, you know, in my area where I live now, there has been certain kinds of angry, I would say, backlash experiences coming up. I was on campus one day, and a man came up to me and he handed me a flyer that said that it was calling for the rounding up and boycotting of all Arabs and Arab-American businesses. Things like that have been happening, and I think that in the Arab community, there's been a lot of fearfulness about that. I have a friend who owns a Middle Eastern restaurant in Portland who said that she was afraid to take her children out to the shopping mall because they had been out in public and someone had said something to her about having these dark children and asking her in an unfriendly way, where are you from? You don't belong here, making comments like that. So there has been a very chilling atmosphere, I think, and I know that a number of my relatives have been concerned about what their status is in terms of their citizenship and their passports, and it's a concern, definitely.
Since your family looks more Arab than you do, and mm-hmm. since you're very fair-skinned and red-haired and so on, have there been times when they've been treated differently than you have?
Well, I know that my father has definitely encountered various forms of subtle and often not so subtle racism. I know that when he was working in a hospital in New York State, that he would encounter certain ethnic slurs. People would bring up certain kinds of all the old phrases that get kicked around there, and it hurt him terribly. And even now, he has certain acquaintances who he's known his whole life who, when the trouble with Iraq started looking at him a little bit out of the corner of their eye and saying, well, Gus, you know, you're not a full-blooded American, are you? You're kind of on their side, aren't you? So That has always, I would say, dogged him.
Do you agree about the war in Iraq?
I think we do. My father has been watching the war, and I think feeling very torn because he considers himself completely American, a very all-American citizen. But he also feels a lot of pain and a lot of sadness about what's been happening in Iraq. And there's also been a kind of chill, I think, in the environment in which a number of people feel that you cannot be both patriotic and yet critique cultural or foreign policy in this country at this moment. That if you are patriotic, you will fall in step with the program. And so my dad has really been struggling with that, and a number of his friends have urged him to not be critical of foreign policy and that he needs to be a patriotic American. So I see the tension that's really come up for him.
Well, Diana Abu-Jabber, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Diana Abu-Jabber is the author of the new novel, Crescent. She teaches at Portland State University. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne Ribaldonato, Patty Leswing, Ian Chilog, and Jessica Chu. I'm Terry Gross.